You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. A question for the day is pregnancy anxiety. Will my baby be okay? I am your host, Noah Larissey. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hi, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. Today we're talking about pregnancy anxiety.
Yes.
And the reason for that is you are pregnant.
I am. Yes. We are pregnant.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Exciting times.
Very, very exciting.
And scary times.
And scary, which is what we're going to be talking about. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience so far?
Well, my experience so far has been a mixture of excitement, amazing moments, new discoveries, as well as an appreciation of my CBT tools.
So you've been putting your CBT tools in your own life. You've been putting them to use.
Full swing, yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about how you've done that.
You always hear that stress and anxiety are negative effects to your life, right? And when you're pregnant, this is even more important because we now know from research in epigenetics that just because your child has a certain set of genes, it depends on you and your environment on which ones of those genes turn on or off. And stress and anxiety has a direct impact on what happens to your child, how your child's temperament will be, what are the characteristics that your child will have, are they going to have the athletic ability that you have, are the weaker genes going to be the ones to turn on, or the stronger genes? So all of that is a direct result from your environment.
So we're wading deep into the nature versus nurture debate, aren't we?
Yes, in complete full swing. This is the nature versus nurture battle.
The idea is that our genes, which are the nature part of things, obviously have a very huge effect, but that epigenetics has shown that nurture actually has an effect on nature, right?
Absolutely. So just because your baby has a certain set of genes, it doesn't necessarily mean that they will all turn on or which ones of them will turn on. That is determined by nurture, your environment, which includes toxins in your environment, includes your nutrition and diet, and most importantly, determined by stressors, whether it's your environmental stressors or your emotional stressors.
What so far has been your biggest fear during your pregnancy?
My biggest fear has been that because I guess I am old, since I am in the category of high-risk pregnancy, my biggest fear is that there would be some sort of genetic abnormality with our babies, and therefore we would lose our babies again.
Okay, so you brought up a couple of things here. First, you said babies, so yes. We're going to know that you're actually having twins, right?
Well, we're having more than one. Yes, we're having twins.
Now, you also referenced the fact that you have struggled with getting pregnant in the past. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, it's been a struggle to get pregnant because, again, we're not in our 20s, we're not even in our 30s. So it's been challenging. And even when we were pregnant, the times that we were, we've had miscarriages. So trying to get pregnant, number one, is challenging. However, then it's actually maintaining that pregnancy is even more challenging. And then third, if you are able to maintain the pregnancy, is ensuring that your baby is going to be healthy.
So it sounds like the fears change and develop. At first, you're concerned whether or not you'll be able to even conceive a child.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you conceive a child, whether the child will be able to
sustain life.
And And then there's the fear of whether there'll be some sort of genetic abnormality.
Yes, genetic abnormality, chromosomal abnormalities.
Now, though, you're into the second trimester, so you're over mm-hmm. the safe period, right?
Yeah, we are. We're over the first trimester, which is when most of the miscarriages occur. That's not to say that the second trimester you're completely safe. There's still a percentage of miscarriages that occur during the second trimester. And because we are having twins, it actually adds to the risk factor.
Have you noticed your anxiety level rising during this time?
Actually, no. You know, I think because I was able to anticipate that this is going to be a very important stage, an important journey in my life, I was actually even more vigilant and put even more effort into making sure that the cognitive behavioral tools that I teach every day is put into use myself. So despite all of the challenges that we've had, despite the struggles and even the daily obstacles, I am surprised at how well I'm able to maintain calm. And that's all due to the tools that I know very well. I know these tools inside out.
I want to get into some specific uses of these tools. But before we do that, what are the risks of anxiety rising, first of all, for the child?
Yes. Well, again, as we're talking about epigenetics, your environment has a huge impact on which genes turn on or off. Now, you have to remember, for any species, that we are either growing and evolving and getting better, or we are in defensive mode, in protective mode, in fear mode. And when your body is being taxed by anxiety and fear, what you're basically signaling to the genes is to be in protective mode. And when your genes are in protective mode, it actually takes away the energy it needs to be in growth mode. So therefore, it's important to be able to mitigate the stressors in your environment so that you're not constantly perceiving fear, you're not constantly experiencing worries, you're not constantly anxious and ruminating over the dangers possible in your environment and potential harm to your babies. By mitigating that, you're able to provide an environment in the womb that fosters and facilitates nurturing, facilitates growth, facilitates evolvement, and thereby helping the strong genes to turn on rather than the protective, fearful genes to turn on.
And you're talking about the genes turning on. This is while baby is in utero, right?
Oh, yes. And this is definitely, we're talking about in utero. However, you know, epigenetics play a role not just in utero. Yes, in utero is the time where you have the most effect on the genes. However, even in a normal day, our genes can turn on and off depending on our environment. If you're constantly facing stressors and you don't have the tools to manage and overcome the stressors, then guess what? Your protective genes are going to be the ones to turn on. And if that occurs chronically, then this is where we experience anxiety disorders, depression.
For the mother, then, how would anxiety during pregnancy affect her health?
Well, if you are constantly feeling anxious, then what you're doing is you're sending stress hormones to the fetus. And then what happens is that that stress hormone turns on those protective, fearful genes rather than the stronger genes that will foster growth and strength.
Let's talk about some strategies that you've used to sort of keep your anxiety level down during your pregnancy.
So the very first thing that I do is I make sure to give myself time to do meditations. I do visualizations during my meditation. You can do that easily when you're in bed, first thing when you wake up, last thing before you go to sleep. I make sure to do that whenever I'm taking a bath. When I'm taking a bath, I visualize my babies. And actually, when I see my babies, it makes me smile. And smiling and that feel good sensation actually sends positive hormones, sends dopamine levels to your babies. So it's important to stay emotionally stable and emotionally available to these experiences. And mindfulness meditations and mindfulness practices are hugely important for this purpose. Some other things that I do, I use my understanding of mind traps. So these are the cognitive distortions that occur mentally without our awareness sometimes that triggers emotions. If you have negative thoughts, you're going to have negative emotions. And if you have positive thoughts, you're going to have positive emotions. So I do a mental check of my thoughts from time to time to make sure that they are rational, to make sure that they reflect reality. And when I catch myself stuck in a flawed thought and I catch myself trapped in negative thinking, I make sure to utilize my thought records. I make sure to identify what are the negative thinking patterns and how I can correct them so that they reflect reality more accurately. And this was very, very important for my first trimester, because in my first trimester, I was going through just about all of the negative pregnancy symptoms. And it got to a point where it just felt like it was never ending. And I knew that was a mental distortion, right? So I was doing what I was doing, jumping to conclusions. I was doing black and white thinking. I was doing catastrophizing, magnification. So I had to realize it's not forever. Most people get past a stage in their second trimester, so I only had a certain number of weeks to endure. And once I get to that stage, because I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, it was a relief to know that I didn't have to suffer forever, which was what I was thinking.
So I would imagine that being pregnant, especially with twins, would make you vulnerable to strange and new bodily sensations. Do you ever find yourself catastrophizing over them?
The first thing I do is to make sure that the sensations that I'm feeling are appropriate, are natural for pregnancy, because this is our first pregnancy that is actually viable. A lot of the sensations I'm unfamiliar with. I'm usually a person who feels something and is able to shake it off. Also, I'm able to shake it off because it doesn't usually last. However, this is the first time where I'm experiencing these ailments and I'm uncertain whether they're normal. Does this mean something is wrong with me? So thank goodness I have an OB, Dr. Lainey Kumit at Cedars-Sinai, who is very, very supportive, who is very knowledgeable, who I can email and answers my questions at any time. I can call and she responds to even the smallest questions. And she has settled a lot of my anxiety about what is normal and what's not, and when I would need to contact her if X, Y, and Z actually happened. So that's the first thing.
What I hear you saying is that you are actually using the doctor to get some reassurance, right?
Well, I am, and rightly so, to be honest, because this is my very first experience and because I am uncertain in terms of whether something is normal or not, right? So getting reassurance endurance is not bad unless you're doing it chronically for something that you already have the answers to. So for example, if I already knew that having this ache on this side of my belly is normal, and yet I'm suspecting that it might not be normal, and I call her 10 different times just to make sure, then that is compulsively seeking reassurance.
In researching this episode, I found out that anxiety about giving birth itself is known as tocophobia. Have you experienced any of that? Is there any anticipatory anxiety about the actual day itself?
You know, I actually don't have any anxiety about it. Number one, we're having a C-section, so that is scheduled, so I won't actually be going through labor. Even so, if I was to go through labor, because I'm a person who has a very high pain threshold, so the pain itself isn't what would get to me. Like, I wouldn't feel nervous about pains. I've had many surgeries in my life. I've been through medical diseases and ailments since I was born. So I've been habituated to pain. So, you know, a lot of people ask, well, would I like to have a doula? And, you know, I spoke to my husband about it, and my sense on that is, yes, I can see how that would be useful for a lot of women going through their first pregnancy or even their second or third pregnancies. For me, I don't feel I need one because to me, having another person in the room, I feel will only just interfere with my own processes. And I am capable of calming myself down more than anyone can. And I'm capable of overcoming whatever obstacles just, again, because of the CB tools that I have. So I feel very confident and very prepared.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the other self-care strategies you've used in terms of exercise or diet or anything else?
Well, unfortunately, I was restricted from exercise until a little after the second trimester. So the first trimester, I was only allowed to walk and swim. And to be honest with you, I was so ill during my first trimester that walking and swimming was not even on my agenda. Now, you're talking to someone who is usually very active, you know, from boxing to strength training to Pilates and yoga. So for me to not have exercise was challenging, which is why I had to rely more on meditation and mindfulness practices and utilizing my cognitive behavioral skills. Now that I am released from the restriction, I do plan on getting back into yoga, although I can't do the hardcore yoga I used to do. I'll have to do prenatal yoga. And I do plan on getting back into Pilates. These are two exercises that would be safe and that stable enough that I can still feel that I'm doing something good for my babies, as well as my body and my mental wellness.
And what kind of strategies have you used around baby books, websites? Because there's just so much information out there. I was curious how you've navigated that.
So there are three general sites that I go to. The first one is yourduedate.com. Another is babybumpapp.com. And the third, which is very well known, is babycenter.com. And I use these three sites because they give me weekly updates on what's happening with my body, what's happening with the baby, so that I can anticipate if I'm supposed to be experiencing one thing or another. The other day, I was just telling my husband, you know, it feels like my heart is fluttering. However, there's no rhythm or pattern to my heart flutter. It just seems like there are multiple flutters happening. And then that night I went to read the week 16's progress, and I guess it came just in time because during week 16, some women began to feel what is called quickening, which is when you feel your babies moving. So I guess that's what it was. It was the babies moving. That was what I was feeling. So those are the three sites that I used to just give me information from time to time, give me weekly progress. I think thebump.com gives me daily progress.
Can you tell us a few things you've had to sort of cut back on in order to sort of maintain your well-being during your pregnancies, or anything you've had to sort of give up?
Oh, when you're pregnant, you have to give up a lot.
What have been the most difficult and challenging things for you to give up?
You know, for me, it would be my daily lattes. You know, at first I thought, because I usually have a glass of wine with dinner, and that's just a ritual that I have. And initially I thought, well, that was going to be tough. However, I haven't had a desire for my wine. I haven't had a desire for alcohol at all. The thing that I have been craving is my espressos, my daily lattes, the caffeine. So I know, especially when I'm feeling exhausted and tired, I wish I could just have my cup of espresso and gain some energy from that. So that has been really, really difficult. The other thing is the foods. I'm a foodie. Both my husband and I are foodies. And we will travel the world for good food. So having to give up a lot of the food that I would ordinarily eat, so anything raw, including sushi or oysters or even raw yolk, that has been really difficult for me. A lot of people say that during your second trimester, all you want to do is eat and food becomes really important. And for me, when my husband asks me every night, what would you like to have for dinner tonight? My response is usually, I have no freaking idea, because I still have that metallic taste in my mouth. And because I still have some food aversion, that nothing sounds really appealing to me. On top of that, because I'm so limited to what I can eat, it's almost like, okay, well, I guess we'll just do that again. And for some reason, the way that I am right now, or it's actually been this way since my first trimester, if I have something, so let's say I have a burger tonight, well, I'm not going to want that burger for another week or two. So it's not like I can have a burger every single night. So it limits my choices even more so, because I'm not going to want the same thing, which is strange because I'm usually the one who's always eating leftovers before pregnancy. And now I'm just like, yeah, this is just gonna, I'm done with this.
Let's talk about some ways in which the significant others can support their partner during the pregnancy in order to sort of help them with their anxiety.
Yes, well, that is a very, very important topic and so relevant to the topic of epigenetics. We think that the woman is the one who is responsible for the health of the baby. And that is just not true. It's not just the woman who's responsible for the health of the babies. That the male or the partner, whoever the partner is, has a huge contributing factor to the development of the babies, to the pregnancy itself, to the health of the womb. Even before the babies are conceived, the health of the sperm has a huge impact on the genetic variations of the baby. And then once you are pregnant, remember your environment plays at least half of the factor to who your child is going to be. What characteristics will your child have? Will your child have this trait versus that trait, this strength versus that weakness? And the truth is, the partner very much plays a huge role in terms of how your environment will be. If you have a supportive spouse, and I am fortunate to have a supportive spouse, that person, he or she, will be present for you, will ask you what your needs are, will do the little things for you, will understand when you're moody and you're irritable, will be present when you have that craving and willing to go out at 11 p.m. to get your cravings fixed. So even the small things, asking you, what can I do for you today? How can I make your experience better? Those little things is what counts. My husband brought home a cupcake for me last night, and that is so small. It's not like he's never brought home a cupcake for me before. He's bring home many treats for me. However, just that little thing allows me to feel, wow, I'm not in this alone. I have my partner to support me in this, and my partner not only cares about me, he's also caring for the baby that is brewing in my belly. My husband comes home and he kisses my tummy and he talks to the baby and he rubs my belly and he tells me how much he loves our twins. And that feeling that you're not alone in this, is I can't even explain that feeling. And now I'm getting teary-eyed.
We're all very, very excited and happy for you. And we very much look forward to your return.
Thank you. And there are always more tips and tools on my new vlog on YouTube. It's called Baby Steps to a Stressless Pregnancy. So if the audience would like to hear more information and follow my journey of the pregnancy week by week, they can go on to YouTube and find me on the Dr. Yip Stressless Life channel.
So this is the end of the first season of the podcast.
Wow,
so,
already?
Already, I know. So I thought what we would do real quick is touch base on some of the things we want to talk about in season two.
Okay.
So maybe we can give the audience a little bit of a preview and let them know that we're coming back. So why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the stuff we're going to be talking about in season two?
Well, I don't believe we've touched upon OCD at all, have we?
We haven't.
Well, I certainly think we need to start talking about OCD because that topic in itself is huge. There's so much misinformation about OCD that it would be unethical for us to not clarify what OCD actually is to the public. I think even within OCD, there are so many different variations and clusters of OCD to discuss. We've got religiosity and scrupulosity. We've got harm OCD. So these are thoughts which is actually very common with pregnancy. Harm OCD, where you feel like you might harm someone or you might be harmed. There is obviously the contamination, the checking. However, there are a lot of different parts of OCD that's not as common that I think it would be useful for us to discuss in the next set of episodes.
Great, because OCD is really what puts you on the map. That's really your specialty, and we haven't even talked about it yet.
So I know.
Something to look forward to.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Noah.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at www.dryip.com/thestresslesslife. Please write to us with questions and comments at thestresslesslife@dryip.com. Until next time, stay stressless.